Hello and welcome to the local news for Friday, May 8th. I'm Terry Clementson reporting for KMUD. In today's news, a lawsuit prompts Mendocino County to consider non-lethal predator control. Humboldt County's budget is already overspent, and lawmakers take aim at the controversial Proposition 13. Stay tuned, all that and more coming right up. A fall victim was found dead by family members in the Buck Mountain area. Kim Kemp reports that the initial call was a reported homicide, but once at scene, the coroner discovered that the death was the result of a tragic accidental fall earlier this week. For those of you who don't know, Buck Mountain is a mountain in Humboldt County accessed by driving Highway 36. It's located between Tierney Peak and Sulphur Valley. Humboldt County supervisors fielded an update on an upcoming budget challenged by rising costs and budget deficits. Daniel Mintz reports.
County spending continues to exceed income, but its structural deficit is less than it was last year. That was the upshot of a third quarter budget update given at the Tuesday Board of Supervisors meeting. Assistant County Administrative Officer Amy Nilsson reported that general fund expenditures will exceed revenues by $1.6 million in the 2015 to 2016 fiscal year, which begins July 1st. That gap includes $1.5 million proposed to be transferred to the county's contingencies or emergency fund. A resulting $151,000 structural deficit would necessitate service reductions, but Nilsson said her office is recommending forwarding this year's fund balance to cover it. Costs will rise for a variety of services in the upcoming budget year, Nilsson continued.
Elections has requested some additional funding in fiscal year 15-16 for two additional elections. One is a presidential primary in the amount of $325,000. The general relief program, as mentioned earlier, has some increased caseload through assistance payments in the transportation assistance program, and they are requesting almost an additional $160,000. And the court's county contribution also will likely require $100,000 in additional funds to provide continuing services. And with these additional costs, this would increase the $151,000 structural deficit up to $737,000 for a total deficit of $2.2 million. And again, this includes $1.5 million in contingencies.
The county's Aviation Enterprise Fund has been an ongoing drain because its airline passenger fee revenues have been dropping. The fund has a deficit of $500,000, and one of the recommendations approved by supervisors is to advance a loan from another fund, the county's motor pool. Asked about the loan's impact to the motor pool, County Administrative Officer Philip Smith-Haynes said there's enough money there to make a loan viable.
You know, there's no magic about why it's the motor pool fund that would loan money to aviation. It's just simply that that's a place where we have quite a bit of cash, unlike in the general fund. Did not want to draw down the general fund anymore. You know, the problems in the aviation fund are something that we've been highlighting for the board for a while now, and so, you know, this is really a sort of a critical point in time where we do actually need to get an infusion of money in there from someplace.
With changes in health care, the county's medical services program is down to one participant. The county will seek to have a $430,000 program fee waived, and in this exchange with Smith-Haynes, Supervisor Rex Bone asked about it.
I'm just saying I'm in favor of using that money somewhere else because we could build that one person in the hospital. Clarification from...
I'll just note that the recommendation today is sort of an if-then statement. We don't have any assurance that CMSP will waive the participation fee for fiscal year 2015-16, but if they do, this is our recommendation for how we'd like to see that spent, and it is building, not building a hospital, but doing some construction around here that's very necessary.
Last year, the county didn't have to pay a program fee, and Supervisor Mark Lovelace said the situation is evolving as changes in health care proceed. Supervisors unanimously approved the additional funding items and the loan to the Aviation Fund. Also approved were recommendations to discontinue voluntary furloughs and to transfer $50,000 from the general fund to cover costs associated with establishing the McKay Community Forest. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Mountain lions aren't exactly common in southern Humboldt, but they are not rare either. More than half of California is mountain lion habitat, and according to California Department of Fish and Game, mountain lions generally exist wherever deer are found. They're solitary and elusive, and their nature is to avoid humans, but humans do see mountain lions stalking prey or getting a drink in our rural neighborhoods. Today was such a case.
You saw a mountain lion today, Friday. Could you please tell us your name and where you saw the mountain lion?
My name's Joe Arias, and I'm down here on Kim-2 Road, and I was at a friend's house looking down. We were looking down at the river, and we seen the mountain lion come out of the off the hillside, and it was, like, big. It was bigger than not a Great Dane, but twice the size of my friend's dog, anyways. Just walking around, we were wondering if it was rabid, or are they out in the daytime like that, or I don't know. Seeing it out there, and a lot of people go down there to go swimming and stuff, and I'm just like, hey, you know, I better call somebody and let them know.
All right, thanks so much for the public awareness report. I know that we have had mountain lion sightings, especially near places where there are chicken coops and other rural areas.
Yeah. Yeah, see, well, there's chickens over here. All three neighbors got chickens, all in one area.
Okay, and did you happen to see where it went, or did you watch it for a little while?
Yeah, we watched it for about 10 minutes. It just came off of a steep hillside and was walking along the hillside. It never went all the way to the water. I was thinking, like, maybe it was thirsty, but it didn't even go to the water, and it just went along the side of the embankment and then disappeared in the trees.
All right. We know that mountain lions are relatively common in our area. It's just not as common to see them during the day, so you're right.
Yeah, that's why I'm calling, because during the day, it's like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But they are out and about during the day. I've talked to the Department of Fish and Wildlife before, and, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, I figured I would just let you guys know. Maybe you might want to put a report that there is a mountain lion down on the river bar.
Okay. Much appreciated. And that was... Just to be clear, this was sighted just outside of Garberville around 2:30 this afternoon, Friday.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay.
Wildlife biologists stress the need to keep mountain lions and other predators wild by limiting human interaction. But it's challenging to keep animals at bay when Northern California is a largely forested environment. Mountain lions prefer deer, but if allowed, they also eat pets and livestock. Statistically speaking, a person is 1,000 times more likely to be struck by lightning than attacked by a mountain lion. But Department of Fish and Wildlife says mountain lions are wild animals and, like any wildlife, can be dangerous. California Department of Wildlife says they want to keep mountain lions wild. Here are a few tips to help. Don't feed deer. It is illegal in California and it will attract mountain lions. Deer-proof your landscaping by avoiding plants that deers like to eat. You can go to Department of Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife's website for more information, a gardener's guide to preventing deer damage. They also say trim brush to reduce hiding places for mountain lions. Don't leave small children or pets outside unattended. Install motion-sensitive lighting around your house. Provide sturdy, covered shelters for sheep, goats, and other vulnerable animals. Don't allow pets outside when mountain lions are most active. Usually that's dawn, dusk, and at night. And bring pet food inside to avoid attracting raccoons, possums, and other potential mountain lion prey. Cars, trucks, and other vehicles kill about 1 million animals every day in the United States, costing billions of dollars and pushing some species to the brink of extinction. Californians can help by using a special website to report roadkill so officials know where to build wildlife crossings. Suzanne Potter reports.
About 1 million animals are killed on America's roads every day. pushing some species to the brink of extinction. The roadkill problem is particularly acute in California's national forests and parks, including Yosemite, where conservationists are building special tunnels for wildlife to cross roads safely. Humans have to know where to build the tunnels, so Fraser Schilling, co-director of the Road Ecology Center at UC Davis, is asking the public to report roadkill on the website wildlifecrossing.net.
It's open to anybody to participate in and helps us to understand where there are conflicts between wildlife and vehicles and possibly what we can do about it.
The California Roadkill Observation System also helps biologists track animal movements. One species, a medium-sized carnivore called a fisher, is estimated to have only 300 adults left in the Southern Sierra population. Pamela Flick with Defenders of Wildlife says the fisher is now a candidate to be listed as an endangered species on the West Coast.
The amount of fishers being hit by cars in the southern Yosemite area could actually be causing a decline in the species.
Sandra Jacobson with the U.S. Forest Service says roadkill isn't just a problem for the animals.
Usually about 200 people per year are killed in animal vehicle collisions in the U.S., and there is literally billions of dollars in other costs, including human injuries and then property damage.
Some of the other wild animals most often killed on California roads include the black bear, mule deer, and great gray owl. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
And a new study points to Highway 101's northern section as a roadkill hotspot. You can report roadkill sightings while you're driving, well, just after driving, by going to the website wildlifecrossing.net. In response to a recent lawsuit, Mendocino County is considering alternative predator management methods to replace the services offered by the Federal Wildlife Services Agency. This Tuesday, Mendocino supervisors heard from the Marin-based group Project Coyote, which advocates for non-lethal methods. Dan Young brings us the details.
Some of you may be unaware of how many animals are killed deliberately in Mendocino County by wildlife services. It was roughly about 459 animals in 2012, which included 25 bears, 5 mountain lions, 126 coyotes, and 6 bobcats.
That's Camila Fox from the Marin-based organization Project Coyote. Fox was speaking to the Mendocino supervisors on May 5th. She was offering the county alternatives to its current policy of hiring the Federal Wildlife Services Agency, an arm of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, to manage the county's wild predator population.
So that you're aware, too, since 1996, Wildlife Services has shot, poisoned, strangled by snare more than 27 million native animals in North America.
Mendocino recently settled a lawsuit related to Wildlife Services' extermination efforts in the county. The lawsuit was filed by Project Coyote and several other wildlife and environmental advocacy groups. Under the agreement, the county cannot renew its $142,000 a year contract with Wildlife Services until it undertakes an environmental impact review of the agency's activities in the county. Fox's presentation to the supervisors was also part of the settlement. Fox explained that resistance to Wildlife Services in Marin County started in 1996 because of the agency's promotion of poison collars. These collars were to be placed on sheep in order to kill coyotes and other predators. She said outrage over the use of poison collars led to a long-term change in Marin County's predator management policies.
A number of us met with our Marin County Board of Supervisors to express our concerns and to look at alternatives to the lethal program. So from that series of meetings, the Marin County Board of Supervisors directed the Ag Department to convene a series of meetings between the ranching community and the conservation community. And what we essentially did with those groups is we identified common ground. That common ground included a recognition that native wild animals are important to our ecosystem, that agriculture is also very important to Marin County. Ultimately, our Marin County Board of Supervisors decided to end the contract with Wildlife Services. This was in 2000, and instead to use that money, that county portion, to institute a non-lethal program.
Fox said the new Marin County program promotes the adoption of guard animals, including dogs and llamas, the installation of better fencing, and other non-lethal methods. She said the money that the county would otherwise pay to Wildlife Services for extermination programs is instead used to assist ranchers with a cost-share program for installing non-lethal protection measures. Fox also said that as new non-lethal techniques are discovered or developed, they are integrated into the program. Kelly Hendricks, who lives and works on a ranch in Marin County and also runs the predator-friendly ranching program for Project Coyote, described for the supervisors one new technology referred to as a fox light.
At night, if you put it in the middle of a field, it's got very strong LED lights that have a random action, so it emulates somebody walking through a field with a flashlight. The lights are really strong. They'll go like a half a mile, and it repels the predators.
Camilla Fox also gave a rundown on what she said were the successes of the Marin County program as a whole.
There's nearly 100% participation from commercial ranchers, sheep ranchers in Marin County now. There is a majority of ranchers who express preference for this non-lethal program over the USDA Wildlife Services program. This is a quote from Stacy Carlson, who is our county ag commissioner. He says that losses fell from 5 to 2.2%, while program costs fell by over $50,000.
Most of the Mendocino County ranchers who spoke at the meeting showed little interest in adopting new non-lethal methods, even if these methods might result in lower rates of depredation and a cost savings for the public. Ranchers like Albert Prazer expressed fear about what would happen to their private businesses if they lose access to publicly subsidized extermination services.
If it wasn't for this program, we wouldn't be in the business. The coyotes are smarter every year. You can't stop this stuff. We can't lose our tools.
And rancher and grape grower Richard Henwood argued for continued public subsidization of extermination services based on a long litany of problems he said coyotes were causing for his private business.
During the winter of 2013-2014, I lost about 5 calves to coyotes. The coyotes not only killed livestock, they've actually threatened my workers in the vineyards. The other problems I've had with coyotes is they chew up my drip lines in my vineyards.
Some members of the public offered responses to Henwood, such as Leslie Gravier.
How about putting a water trough out there so they aren't after those drip lines? I mean, there's common sense that goes along with all of this.
Jessica Bloom from the Animal Legal Defense Fund asked that as the supervisors review their contract with Wildlife Services, that they follow science.
Science will tell us exactly what to do in this situation, and so that's all we're asking you to do is to look at the science and evaluate it with an open mind.
However, Kim Davis asked the supervisors not to heed the advice of people like Bloom.
And I urge you to listen to these ranchers. Don't let these groups pressure you or distract you with studies.
Davis also said that scientific and legal arguments against predator extermination programs should be ignored because they are based only on quote-unquote emotion. Kate Marionchild responded to Davis with a detailed lesson in the biology of coyote reproduction in response to population pressures and a lesson in economics. At the end, Marionchild gave this summary.
The more you kill coyotes, the more coyotes you have. They breed more. So the more you utilize wildlife services to kill coyotes, the more you're going to need wildlife services and the more it's going to cost.
The Mendocino supervisor's only action following the presentation and discussion was to accept the report given by Project Coyote. Reporting for KMUD, this is Dan Young.
Back to Humboldt County. In the sports world, May registration is open for Southern Humboldt soccer. Families will be gathering at the Redway Little League Field for on-site soccer registration this Saturday. According to the coaches, first-time players to the league must bring a photocopy of an approved government identification with a government seal. That can be a copy of a birth certificate, passport, green card, medical card, driver's license, or California ID. And big news, for the first time, kids can participate in a cleat exchange. Organizers posted on their Facebook page that parents are asked to bring gently used cleats to share with others or trade. The shoes will be stored in the soccer shed and coaches will have access to them. In order to be guaranteed a spot on a soccer team this season, parents must have applications in the mail by May 31st or sign up on site this Saturday. Services for mentally ill people in Humboldt County are under review, and now's the chance for public input. According to a press release from Humboldt County's Department of Health and Human Services, starting today, May 8th, everyone has a chance to review and comment on the county's Mental Health Services Act 3-year plan. The plan outlines Mental Health Services Act programs and expenditures, which are funded by Proposition 63. You might remember Prop 63 imposed a 1% tax on personal income in excess of $1 million. The Mental Health Services Act comment period will be open for 30 days. You can see the plan on the Humboldt County website. Comments can be submitted via email, mhsacomments@co.humboldt.ca.us. You can also send your comments via snail mail. Here's the address, DHHS Mental Health, attention, Jacqueline Cullinton. Here's the address, 720 Wood Street, Eureka, 95501. You can also call and make comments, 707-441-3770, or toll free, 1-866-320-8911. And we'll have this information here at KMUD Radio if you have more questions in the coming weeks. This week, the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board held a public meeting on their draft waste discharge requirements for activities associated with the cultivation of marijuana. They held that meeting in Eureka, and they're traveling to Laytonville this weekend for the same public workshop. The draft waste discharge requirements outline a three-tiered program. Tier 1 would apply for sites with a cultivation area of less than 2,000 square feet, slopes less than 35%, and low risk to water quality. Tier 2 would apply to sites that do not meet the characteristics of Tier 1 or that otherwise present a higher risk to water quality. And Tier 3 would apply to sites that require cleanup, restoration, or remediation from the impacts of past management activities on the land. KMUD reporter Carrie Reynolds was at this Thursday's meeting in Eureka, and reporter Kate Maxwell will be at the meeting in Laytonville. Tune in next week for detailed reports. Public comment on the draft waste discharge requirements are due by June 8th. Speaking of water, the Association of California Water Agencies is sponsoring a California Assembly Bill, AB 291, which seeks to, quote, reduce confusion and administrative burdens under current California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, notification requirements for multi-county water projects. The bill cleared the assembly following a floor vote this Thursday. As amended on April 15th, AB 291 would require local agencies to submit a CEQA notice of determination to the Office of Planning and Research to be posted on the CEQANet website. Local agencies also will be required to file the notice with the county clerk in their home county and send a copy by certified mail to each county affected by the water project. The bill will now be sent to the Senate Rules Committee for assignment to a Senate Policy Committee. In more state news this week, the full Senate approved Senator Mitchell's bill, SB 227. It would prohibit the use of a criminal grand jury in cases of officer-involved shootings or in cases where excessive force used by an officer results in the death of a suspect. Here's Senator Mitchell.
Some of the opposition argues that its value is in allowing citizens to step forward and participate and not have their names revealed. Certainly, since the Rodney King incident and through technology, the fact that we all have cameras on our cell phones, the peace officers' names are no longer secret. The various departments release their names early on in the investigatory process, and so it doesn't protect the quote-unquote innocent anymore, particularly with regard to police-involved cases. So I am open to the opposition. We've had conversations, but I've not been approached with one argument that I think justifies not pursuing this bill.
Senator Mitchell says times have changed and lawmakers need to adapt. She says, quote, secrecy in grand jury proceedings was intended to protect the reputations of the unindicted individuals accused of crimes who grand juries decided should not stand trial. In today's world of blogs, lightning fast news, and video cameras at the touch of a cell phone, the original purpose of the grand jury has lost its meaning. But the unintentional consequence has become a way to keep citizens from being fully informed and involved in the trials of those peace officers accused of abusing their power. We'll let you know what happens with SB 227. Humboldt State University students led vocal protests and even staged a multi-week-long sit-in on campus after the university fired Indian Natural Resources Science and Engineering Program Director Jacqueline Bowman. This Thursday, Bowman filed a wrongful termination and discrimination lawsuit against Humboldt State University and four of its officials. According to the Times-Standard newspaper, Bowman claims she was terminated from her position after criticizing the university of poor commitment to diversity and of dismantling on-campus Native American programs. Times-Standard reporter Will Houston says the lawsuit was filed by Eureka attorney Peter Martin. The lawsuit names five defendants associated with the university: the California State University Board of Trustees, HSU President Lisa Rosbacher, Interim Provost and Vice President of Academic Affairs Jenny Zorn, Senior Associate Vice President for Faculty Affairs and Human Resources Colleen Mullery, and Director of HSU's Office of Diversity and Inclusion Radla Welby. KMBD News will bring you more information as it becomes available. A coalition of unions, religious organizations, civil rights, and other community groups is launching a campaign to change California's Proposition 13 property tax law. They say the law has built-in loopholes that let big corporations avoid paying their fair share of property taxes. Their proposal would bring in up to $9 billion a year. The advocates say are needed for schools, roads, and other local services. Christopher Martinez reports.
California's Proposition 13 of 1978 helped launch a nationwide tax revolt across the nation, perhaps even helping elect Ronald Reagan president in 1980. But some critics say the measure has gone beyond limiting property taxes for homeowners, creating a property tax loophole that benefits big corporations and wealthy property owners. A new coalition called Make It Fair is pushing a measure to close what they call loopholes that let wealthy property owners avoid paying their fair share of property taxes. Anthony Thigpen is president of the social justice group California Calls and chair of the Make It Fair coalition.
That means that they are paying taxes on the value of their land in 1970 figures, not 2015. And those loopholes are giving wealthy commercial property owners a break and shortchanging all the rest of us. Chevron is under assessment alone costs California communities over $100 million a year. Chevron alone. Our proposal is to stop that preferential treatment for this group and reassess their property based on current market values.
The coalition wants to separate out corporate property taxes from residential property taxes, what's called a split roll tax. Under that proposal, property taxes on homes would still be limited by Prop 13, but commercial and industrial properties would be assessed at the current fair market value. The coalition is backed by unions like the California Teachers Association and SEIU California, as well as religious and community groups like California Church Impact, the California Association of Food Banks, the UC Students Association, and the Health and Human Services Network. The coalition's news conference at Sutter Middle School in Sacramento drew activists from across the state, including a delegation of community college students from De Anza College in Cupertino. Jennifer is a sociology student at De Anza.
This is an issue about equity and about resources that we need as students, that we're not just a workforce, but we're also people and we need our resources in order to succeed.
The students and other activists say they're expecting a big fight on the issue. There's already a business-backed coalition opposing a split-roll property tax. It's called Californians to Stop Higher Property Taxes, and it's chaired by the heads of the California Chamber of Commerce and the California Taxpayers Association. Spokespersons for that coalition were not available for interview, but in a written statement from the coalition, the California Taxpayers Association Chair Teresa Casazza says Proposition 13 is not broken. It continues to protect homeowners and business owners from increases in their property taxes. Rex Heim of the California Business Properties Association says raising taxes forces businesses and jobs out of California. He says a split-roll property tax proposal is the last thing California's businesses need. The coalition says a split-roll tax would disproportionately hurt small businesses. But some small businesses disagree. Adam Roshan is a small business owner in the Central Valley town of Exeter. He says the Make It Fair proposal would level the playing field for small businesses competing with big corporations that pay low property taxes.
I want to be very clear here. The majority of commercial properties in California are already assessed at or close to market value. If we bring the minority of commercial properties that are currently not paying their fair share up to fair market value, then we'll have money to invest in our schools and our local services, an estimated $9 billion annually to these services.
Several past attempts to change Prop 13 have failed, but the activists in the Make It Fair coalition say Californians are ready for a change, citing recent public opinion polls and studies on the issue. John Kim is director of the civil rights group The Advancement Project, a group that's on the Make It Fair coalition's executive committee. He says California is ready for this after